Hey, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you to the Valley Group, and thank you, Natasha, for that really awesome. I've watched you grow as well, and it's an amazing process. That's one of the things we can do here in this program is you can watch others grow, and we can see where they, especially from when they first came in. You know, like I said, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic. You know, and I'm grateful and I'm blessed to be an alcoholic. And you're probably sitting there wondering what the hell does this guy have to be grateful for being an alcoholic for? You know, but because I made it to this program, man, I was one of the people that, you know, I've first got in these rooms in 2017, you know, looking to get sober, and, you know, had a couple hiccups since then, but, you know, yeah, I'm grateful to be here, because some of us don't make it back, and I'm glad to have not one, not two, but three chances in this program to try to get it right, and, you know, I made the most of it this time. But I'm going to keep it simple. I'm kind of going to keep it kind of like what used to be like, what happened, and what, like, I have notes, so bear with me, guys, you know. Robert, he's gone, but, you know, I think he's more nervous than me, but I love that guy. See him grow as well, man. It's awesome. So what it used to be like, man, you know, let's see, this the path insanity, you know. I'm the type of alcoholic where, you know, I'm so arrogant and I'm so selfish and I have such a big ego that I tell you that I don't have an ego. I'm not arrogant. That's some pretty arrogant, selfish stuff, man, when you're telling people you don't have an ego and you're absolutely arrogant, you know. So I was born in the Bay Area, you know. Growing up, I had a lot of love, man. Both my parents are not alcoholics. Alcoholism runs very seldomly in my family. There's two people on my dad's side that have passed away due to the disease. They don't really talk about it much. In fact, they don't really talk about anything like that. And we'll get into that later. But, you know, lots of love. But the one thing that was missing, man, even when I was a kid, they were able to show me a lot of love. Seldomly, you know, they split up shortly after I was born. And, you know, but it's hard to imagine my parents liking each other enough even to be together so that they can consummate their relationship and have me and my brother 18 months later. That's as bluntly as I can put it. Like, these people had no love for each other. And they may have not been what's called alcoholics, but they were drug addicts. I know we don't talk about drugs in AA. We have a singleness of purpose, so I'll kind of keep it to that. But, you know, alcohol was not something that I personally witnessed growing up. Anything, you know, it hit me. I don't know why, you know, but again, it's hard to imagine liking them each other enough to, you know, to even have me and my brother, you know. And growing up, again, I had lots of love. I had a really excellent family, these matriarchal figures in my life, my grandmother on my mom's side, my grandma Sue, and also my dad's side, my mom, my pa, my grandma, and my grandpa. They pretty much raised me as a child, you know, later. And again, love, respect, all these things that gave me these really good values, you know. But even as a kid, you know, I was mischievous. You know, I got in trouble a lot. I always try to get away with certain things, you know. I fantasize, yeah, my father said exactly. I fantasize about how I can get away with it, you know, and what I can do. And, you know, there's always something missing, man. I didn't have a want for anything. You know, I had food, I had clothes, I had shelter, I had all these awesome things, basically all my needs and then some, you know. But even that wasn't good enough for me, man. You know, growing up, I was an ungrateful little shit, you know. I really was. Like, I made my mom cry on several different occasions on Christmas, you know, because I didn't get exactly what I wanted. So I already had, before alcohol, I had these defects, man, where I'm ungrateful, I'm selfish. You know, I really used to get fight over, like, the little last bit of macaroni and cheese and stuff. Yeah, another story entirely. But segueing to that, you know, food was like the first thing that substance that I put in my body that changed the way I feel, and I liked it because, again, I didn't like how I felt. And there was something missing, man. I couldn't put my foot on it. Of course, I'm a kid. I'm not really going to think about stuff like that. But it changed the way I feel, and I liked it. And therefore, I wanted it all the time, you know, and I'm, again, got it all the time. And so I got kind of fat, you know, when I was younger. I mean, I was the kind of kid that was fat, but, like, I got called fat by a kid fatter than me in, like, grade school. And that really did a lot to, like, completely just crush my self-esteem and my, you know, not really ego, but that increased later, but, you know, totally crushed my little spirits, you know what I mean? And so, you know, my mom's getting more of her disease, you know, growing up, probably about around fourth or fifth grade, you know, out doing stuff that, you know, things that we do now, you know, things that we go out and we do. I didn't understand what kind of was happening. I was sheltered from it. So I'd hear certain things here and there, but the way my family was, is my mom got me throughout the week, you know. I lived with my mom and all that stuff. My dad had me on the weekends, so my dad was kind of a little vacation away from that. But pretty soon that stopped, man, you know, and my dad married my stepmom, and she was really abusive to me, both physically and emotionally. And so that's when I learned how to isolate. You know, I got real good at that. You know, isolate, hide the way I feel. And again, going back to my first solution, the first substance that made me feel better, you know, I dealt in that full force, you know, because I didn't feel like I was anything, man. I felt like I was nothing, you know, and I hated the way I feel. And so therefore, you know, I'm just going to isolate myself as much as possible and do anything I can to change the way I feel. And then pretty soon after that, you know, back up a little bit. Me and my mom have a really close relationship. Not so much now. I'll get into that. But about when I was in the middle of fifth grade, I moved back to the Bay Area. My mom gave up all her rights to me because my mom, again, was getting deeper in disease. She was committing crimes for certain things. You know, she met this dude who was a really, like, intravenous drug user. And, you know, we were going through a lot of shit, man, before this. I ended up with my mom. We got kicked out of the house we were living at. And I ended up living in the back of a truck for a little bit, you know. And that was again, feeling like I'm not, it was my fault somehow that this is, it's, you know, I caused this, or me and my brother caused this. And again, I wanted to be anybody but myself. I remember feeling I'm like, you know, so my dad intervened. He's like, look, I'm taking the kids. See you later. Well, shortly after that, my mom went to prison. So, for the first time, you know, emphasize first time, you know, and my whole mentality changed. This is a part where I was like, okay, well, you know, these feelings I was feeling, they weren't totally as bad, but now they got a lot worse. And so, you know, I don't have my mom to come and comfort me and kind of make me feel better. And of course, you know, my solution to not being food, give me as much food as I want to make and love and, you know, whatever to make me feel better. I mean, my dad worked all the time. My grandparents worked all the time too. My family has their own business in the Bay Area. So I was home alone a lot. I mean, even as a kid, I was home alone a lot. But again, that was perfect for me because I started getting my own weird little fantasy worlds, you know, of revenge and whatnot, you know, because I felt like the world owed me a favor, man. I felt like, you know, damn, like, I don't want to be anybody else but me. And it wasn't my fault, you know, and everybody look out, you know. So I started acting out a lot, you know. And for the first time, man, when I was 13 years old, that's when alcohol played into the picture. I remember coming home from school one day, and growing up, I've heard all these awesome drinking stories by, like, my uncle and my dad. My dad in college, my uncle just, you know, being the local tough guy, knucklehead, you know. I hear all these awesome stories about drinking, like, you know, all the girls and all the parties and all that stuff. And so, you know, I'm like, well, I feel like I'm like this 13-year-old, like, nothingness, you know. I definitely don't have girls on, you know. I'm interested in girls, for sure, you know, but, like, I'm like, no way I can, you know, I'm just like, no one's gonna have me, you know. So, but I'm like, I remember these in my head, and one day, I'm just like, you know, my grandparents had this immense liquor cabinet, you know, back in the day, you know, in, like, the 60s and stuff, they were really into, like, entertaining and having little parties and whatnot, you know, and people drank back then, people drank a lot. I wouldn't consider my grandparents alcoholics, more like social drinkers, you know, they can drink and put it down, but they had a whole closet full of booze, man. You could walk in this thing, and there's, like, booze in it, like, wall to wall, anything you could ever imagine, you know, and so I'm like, you know what, today's my day, man. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna see what this alcohol is all about. And I did exactly that. You know, I dusted off, had to blow the dust off a ball of dark Bacardi rum. You know, ugh. And I remember that, you know, it was horrible. The way it tasted was just god awful and gross. And I was pissed because, you know, they didn't have any good mixers. You know, like, who needs a mixer? You know, but back, you know, I assume somebody told me you need to mix this stuff. So I mixed it up with some Diet Coke because they're like health nuts. You know, so I couldn't have the food I wanted. You know, I was kind of mad. You know, even though it was benefited me. But yeah, I drank, man, and I finished that whole half a bottle, and I hid it in the back so nobody would, you know, see. So, and I got away with it. That was the best part, man. I'm like, cool, I got away with it, and I feel great. What alcohol did for me, man, was whoever I felt I was, I thought I was, my past, anything like that, gone. The second I became intoxicated, man, it was gone. I was always a shy, well, you know, growing up, before my mom went to prison and all that stuff, you know, my stepmom, you know, I was really outgoing, had a lot of friends, stuff like that. But once my stepmom came in, you know, and I started feeling, like, less and less about myself, you know, I started, again, isolating and not feeling like I'm, you know, not talking, man, not being really outgoing. And I was super shy, you know. I mean, I'm just horribly shy. I mean, horribly, horrendously shy. But when I drank, man, that all went away. Oh, yeah, man, I was like, I felt stronger, you know, I felt more handsome. I mean, for the first time ever. I mean, I'm at 13, I'm like, cool, you know, and it's like the perfect age, you know. I'm feeling handsome, I could talk to people, I like drunk dialed like all my relatives, you know. They didn't know. Again, I got away with it, you know, and this is awesome. I mean, honestly awesome, you know. You know, I tried to do it again, I got in trouble, and I was always one that, like, at this time, I'm like, I don't want to get in trouble, this is horrible, you know. And I feared the consequences. You know, I had a lot of fears, man. I feared, you know, what would happen, all that stuff. But nothing happened. Again, I got a little slap on the wrist. You know, they talked to me a little bit. And nobody ever discussed it. Even though there's two of our family members that died from alcoholism, nobody was just like, you know, oh, this might be a bad thing. You know, but it kept increasing, man, when I hit 17. My mom, fresh out of prison, you know, for the first time. And things are going to be different, man. You know, my mom, she kept a lid on, you know, she wasn't using anything. She had probation. You couldn't even have guns in the house. Like, it was cool. It was probably one of the most awesome times I've had growing up with my mom. You know, it was really good. Even though it was my dad was cool, you know. You know, my mom felt guilty. She felt guilty for leaving us and going to prison, you know, and doing what she did, and which is some, you know, check fraud and some other stuff that I'll mostly get into, but some bad stuff, you know. And when she came back, she had a lot of guilt between me and my brother, you know, for me and my brother. She's like, I did this. So what that really means is, and of course, me being, you know, of an alcoholic mind, I took advantage of that. Because mom gives me carte blanche to do whatever I want. Oh, yeah, well, guess what do I want to do? I want to get drunk and go to parties. I'm 17 years old. And so that's exactly what happened, you know. I'm hitting my first high school parties. I'm talking to the girls. Things are happening. I'm having all these friends, you know. And it felt great, man. This is when arrogance and entitlement started really coming out. Because I'm arrogant now. I'm like, cool, you know. Look at me. I'm having these parties, and things are cool. And I'm somebody now, even though, like, what, a couple years earlier, I felt like I was nothing. Like, completely nothing. I felt like I was just like a freaking speck of dust. Now I'm somebody now, you know. But looking back on it, it doesn't make any sense. But right then, I believed it, you know. It felt good and entitled, you know. Especially when I got older, man, you know. Finally got out of the house. You know, before this, you know, my senior year of high school was a complete wreck. Because, you know, I started getting into my solution, man. It was like, it's party time. I thought, like, hey, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know. But I'm an alcoholic, man. You know, what's that mean? You know, I'm an alcoholic because when I put alcohol in my body, you know, I lose the ability of choice. I can't stop. When I take a drink, I can't tell you what's going to happen, how many I'm going to have, where I'm going to end up, who I'm going to be with, what city I'm going to be in. It doesn't matter. Once I drink, and then if I don't drink, you know, after that first drink, I have this mental obsession, this physical craving, man. All I think about is I want more. How can I get more? Where can I get away with? What do I have to do to get more? You know, and this, I need it. I can't function without it, you know, even beginning, man, you know. So I finally get out of the house after my senior year was a complete train wreck, man, because all I wanted to do is party, get laid, and drink, you know, to be a blunt. That's all I cared about. I was a straight student, man. I had all AP classes, you know, which, again, people, you know, the people I was surrounding myself with, it's just what you're doing, man, you know. But I had all AP classes my senior year, and guess what? I effed off all of them because, you know, this is my solution. This is cool. This is what I've always wanted. So there's somebody like me that felt completely and just utterly not only alone, but just like I was nothing. Now I have people that are around me, and people want something to do with me, you know, and it's pretty cool. So that's all I wanted to do, man. I took it just to the extreme. So I had to go to homeschool at 18. That was a lot of fun. I wouldn't recommend that at all because I didn't do my homework. I just sat around and did what I did, drink and, you know, what we do, you know, just completely just, you know, run amok. But I finally did, you know, sobered up enough. Even then, man, I should have known, you know. I've even made a comment to my mother, you know, I should probably look at getting some help for this because I'm not stopping, you know, and it's starting to interfere with my daily life. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, but being an addict, my mom's an addict herself, so she was like, it's okay, you know. I think me and my mom really could have been in a relationship, and she's like, basically, I just want you to stay around. I don't want you to go anywhere. So here's again, carte blanche, do whatever you want, and it's exactly what I did. But I get found at the real world, man. You know, I somehow finish homeschool with a good grade, and straight student going from, like, looking like I may have to repeat senior year, finally held together. I did it, you know. I get out the ruler, man, start getting a job, start working, you know. And then I start getting to college in my 20s, and I'm working, and, you know, I go to parties every weekend. And, you know, those are great, you know. I mean, that's what I look forward to every weekend, you know. I'm like, again, that entitlement is just increasing. Like, I'm entitled to do this. I'm working hard. I'm going to school. So guess what? I have a reason to do this. I'm 20-something. This is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, who the hell are you telling me to stop? You know what I mean? But I realized I could never drink like my friends. You know, again, I just thought I was doing what I was supposed to do. I was having fun. There was no ramifications. Nothing was going on. I wasn't getting any DUIs. I wasn't getting arrested. I had a completely clean record. I mean, I have had a completely clean record until I was 29. I'll get into that, though. But, you know, there was no consequence for my actions, man. Like, I was like, I'm almost going to do this till the wheels fall off, you know? But, and I'm just that guy, you know, I'd go into your party and I would drink all your nasty liquor, like your black, your Canadian velvet. it, and you know, your black velvet and all your stuff, you know, because no one else was drinking it, so I was like, I'll take it, yeah, give that to me, you know. And I imagine, I mean, people that tell me slow down, I cannot drink like my friends were. They were going to have a good time. Every time I put a bottle to my lips, I end up blacked out, you know, half naked, you know, puking in somebody's, like, plants. And it's like, I always want to get fun, that's the thing. And then, yeah, you know, pretty soon, you know, people are like, Robert, you have to slow down. You have to be the designated driver. Well, you can't tell an alcoholic to be a designated driver because I'm only going to have a couple. But once I have that first beer, I lose the power of choice. And therefore, I'm pissed drunk before anybody else even is. And it's not a fun time. People are having to take care of me. You know, I'm embarrassing people. I'm embarrassing people at a party. Like, come on, you know, that's all bad. You know, so, you know, it got worse and worse, man, you know, and pretty soon, like, I could not wait. That mental obsession, man, I couldn't wait for the party every weekend. I couldn't wait for my work week to end. I couldn't wait for that party, you know, because this time I'm showing up to work drunk. I'm drinking at work. I'm showing up sweating bullets because I'm hungover, like, and all I think about is, okay, alcohol. I gotta get it. I gotta have it, you know. When's the party? Come on. It's, you know, that many hours? Okay. You know, so I started drinking during the week, man. You know, I couldn't wait for the weekend. I couldn't wait to have a, because that was, like, my cover, man. You know, there's a party. Well, we're all drinking here at a party. It's okay, you know? No, I couldn't even wait for that. I had to drink during the week sometimes, you know? And over time, it just got worse again to the point where, you know, I started getting unemployed. You know, I entered my first program, you know, in about 2015, it was a religious program. It was the Fresno Rescue Mission. And, you know, I didn't want to get there. Again, I didn't want to get sober. It's kind of like this last time. You know, I didn't want to get sober. I'll get to that, though. But, you know, I didn't want to get sober at all. I actually went, you know, I got to the point where this, you know, the demoralization, man, you know, I just want to die. And, you know, again, it should be a red flag to me that, you know, something's not working, man. You know, I'm drinking. I'm supposed to be having fun. I'm drinking to feel good. And all I want to do is I want to die, man. I don't want to live. I curse the God that, like, you know, any God out there, because I consider myself an atheist at the time. Where was God when all these things were happening, you know? I was like, you know, because I came to every morning and I was pissed off. I was pissed off because I came to. I woke up for, you know, which I should have been grateful for. I wasn't, man. I just didn't want to be around. In any form of the word, I just want to evaporate into the ether, you know. But God has other plans, you know. And so I entered an 18-month, I entered a program. It was like 18 months long. I only made it about 9 months of it, you know. And it was a religious program, you know. I was raised Catholic, and so I had a problem with God right off the bat when I entered, you know. And then I get more of it, you know. There's some spiritual, you know, it was religion. Basically, it was like Jesus and work. You work hard every day. I worked in the kitchen for 16 hours a day, and I went to chapel at night. I met a lot of good people in there, you know. I worked with two, like, what I would consider the time, because I had these other issues, right? And I didn't consider myself an alcoholic. I'm like, no, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, you know? I have a problem with these dry goods, man. No, not me. I was just thinking about alcohol every single day I was in there, you know? Pretty much. That's all I thought about. I was like, when I get out, I'm going to have a beer. I cannot wait. You know, which is, if you're in a rehab, that's kind of messed up. But that's what I thought about, you know. But there was one guy in there, you know, he talked about a different solution, man. He talked about this big book. And this guy was a real deal alcoholic, what we consider in the book, you know. And he was an oddity there because there was these people, you know, it was a religious program. And he was here talking about the big book and the solutions that were in contain the big book, and people kind of made fun of him because, you know, oh, you're not talking about Jesus and stuff, and you're talking about this big book. Well, that doesn't work, you know. I remember that, you know, this guy named Steve, and that implanted something in me, you know. I didn't really know much about AA, but I don't know, this guy was different. He was cool, and he talked about this alternate solution. And I was looking for a solution. I didn't, you know, this whole religious thing wasn't working out for me, but this big book thing was kind of interesting, you know. You know, I basically got out. I left early. You know, my girlfriend at the time, she needed me to do some stuff, and we had to move her, and, you know, just life happened. And I was looking to get out anyways again. You know, I was like, I got to be with all these dudes. It was like MCF. Have you ever been to MCF around here? The jail racks and all stuff is basically like that in a mission. So, never been in jail at this point, but I can imagine that was kind of like, you know, that's what the guys in there were telling me. So I was like, okay, cool, you know, I'm ready to get the hell out of here. So, yeah, I did that, you know, I stayed sober for about 18 months, man, about a year and a half, you know, until one day, you know, but white knuckle sobriety, that what they talk about, you know, I was making stuff happen. Again, I'm really good at getting stuff. You know, a lot of us are. We're good at getting stuff. We'll get stuff when we get sober for a little bit. We'll get places to live. We'll get jobs. We'll get cars. We'll get, like, friends. We'll get support, you know, from our families again. We'll get stuff, man. And that's how it happened. I got stuff. I worked hard, yeah, but, you know, I got stuff. I got the apartment of my dreams in the Tower District of Fresno, which is, like, horrible because, you know, that was my old stomping grounds in college. It was a Tower District, dude. Yeah. If I even know, yeah. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, if you're an alcoholic, man, you live by a bunch of bars, you can't remember how this story's going to end up. Anyways, yeah, so I got that, got the cars, got everything cool, you know, moved my girlfriend to my apartment, everything's going good. I had a really, really, really good job when I got out, you know. You know, what happened was I decided to get a six-pack one day, you know, because, again, in my mind, I'm not an alcoholic. Right, I'm a drug addict. Okay, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, but every time I drink, you know, so yeah, I got myself that six pack, man, and pretty soon, well, you know, yeah, it went all bad, man. It went bad quick, and you know, my girlfriend at the time, I relapsed. You know, she's like, you gotta stay sober, you know, and I didn't stay sober. Obviously, when I came in drunk, she left. I remember telling her, I said, please don't leave. Something told me just not to, you know, not like, you know, I want you here. I'm like, don't leave. Something bad's gonna happen. Well, she left, man. Don't blame her. She took her car and she left, you know, and she was distraught, and she ended up getting to, it was raining out. She got into an accident, man. You know, driving to her, I think her sister's house, and she careened off an embankment, man. And you know, she became like, she shattered one of her vertebrae in her neck, and she became a quadriplegic, man. And yeah, and you know, right then and there, I was drunk. I was already drunk by the time I got a phone call. And when I answered the phone call, you know, I was mad. Of course, I'm mad because she left. So I'm like, what the hell? You know, what do you want? You know, I'm a nicer version of what I said. You know, what do you want? You know, and it was her sister. So, you know, I had to pull myself together and go to the ER. I split, man. I didn't even stay there. You know, a lot of people, you know, would take the opportunity to clean up their act, and they would take their opportunity to be there for their significant other. But what did I do? What I did was I used that as a perfect opportunity to completely destroy myself. I mean, completely. But not just that, man. You know, I took the sympathy and all the stuff from that she should get. I took that all from her because that's what I wanted. I'm like, cool. I'm going to destroy myself. And also, I'm going to take all the sympathy that I possibly can because guess what? That's what I want. She's the one there in the hospital in ICU, but guess what? I'm the one that needs all the sympathy. I'm the one that needs all, and that's some selfish, arrogant stuff, man. And that's going back to what's it called, me being arrogant and selfish, you know, and that was pretty much my height of it, you know. A line just crossed that day, you know, where, you know, I thought I was doing what I was doing. This time, no, I knew I was a full-blown alcoholic, man, and I drank as such, and, you know, stuff started happening in the morning. I still had my job, you know. I just started engaging behaviors, man, that would basically just suit me, you know. And I started drinking more and more. I mean, more amounts than I ever drank all day, every day, you know. But I started getting stuff like the shakes, man, when I woke up in the morning. When I came to, I shouldn't say wake up, you know. I'd basically drink, like, all night until, like, 4 in the morning, get 1 hour of sleep, and go to work at 6, you know. Things happening, man. Things started happening. And I started going to work, and I need alcohol right then and there. I mean, the need was never that bad. I'm talking about the mental obsession, man. That's all I thought about. And I was operating heavy machinery. I was doing other stuff. You know, I couldn't exactly, like, split and go get a drink, but I wanted to, and that's all I thought about. I looked like crap every single day, and I just kept that up, because, again, you know, I tried to be there for as much as possible, but I couldn't, you know. And eventually, you know, I got completely burned out, man. You know, I got to the point where I'd rather sit and drink all day than do any kind of, like, you know, support for my girl, you know, my girlfriend at the time, which, in my mind, like, we're broke up. I'm a bachelor now. That's exactly what I thought. We're a bachelor, and I'm doing exactly what and then, you know, my apartment, you know, became a kind of like with a revolving door, you know. It was horrible. What happened was I couldn't do anymore, and so I told my foreman, hey, you know, I'm sick and I don't feel well. I left. This is St. Patrick's Day. Perfect day to quit your job when you're an alcoholic. St. Patrick's Day, I go home. I don't remember anything. Well, I mean, blackouts were getting normal, but, you know, I mean, when you're drinking on the regular, not so much, but this time, yeah. And I drank up my apartment, man. My car was total. I got other cars. I drank them up. You know, I drank all my friendships, my relationships, all that stuff. You know, the only people that want to hang around me were people that drink like I did. You know, people that want a place to chill while they get, you know, pissed drunk and hang out, you know, and that's all I had in them surround me. And I was lonely, man. It didn't matter how many people came by, you know, how many women came by, anything like that, you know, nothing would change how I felt inside as far as, like, I'm lonelier than I've ever been before. And this feeling of the incomprehensible demoralization, man, absolutely. Knowing what I know now, I totally understand what that means and how that feels, and that's what I was feeling, you know. Let's see. So over time, man, again, I drank up that apartment, man. I got an opportunity to go work in Corcoran. My mom's family is from Corcoran, so that's the other half of my family. I've lived there half my life, and so she's like, just come down, and, you know, we'll buy you a, you know, a ticket and get out of the situation you're in. So I banned my apartment, man. You know, I was squatting there anyways because, of course, I'm an alcoholic. I'm drunk. I'm not going to pay rent. I don't really need electricity when I could buy candles at the dollar store. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's light 12 hours out of the day. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I told myself, you know what I mean? It's okay. I had all these things to cover me before, and none of that mattered. I just want to sit in this deep, dark alcoholic hole I kept putting myself into, and that's it. I don't need stuff like food. Oh, nope, no. I'll drink my breakfast, lunch, dinner. It's okay. You know, but eventually, you know, before I got kicked out by the sheriffs, you know, I was like, look, I do something. So I got a leg up by my mom's boyfriend, and I came moved with them out in the country, out in Joaquina there, 7 miles from Tulare, kind of on the little county line there by Corcoran and Kings County and Tulare County. I got a really good job. Again, I got stuff, you know. You know, I used most of the money she gave me for, you know, a fifth and a 30-pack, but that's okay, you know. I had to drink before I got on the train, you know, of course, you know. So I did that, went the train, got there, and went to work, man, you know. Went to work again, but I didn't stop. I didn't do anything. So I kept drinking until one day I just became unemployable, man. I couldn't do it, you know. I didn't want to do anything but drink. That's all I wanted to do. And, you know, I remember that change happening, that line being crossed again. I mean, like, all I want to do is drink and engage in my behaviors that I thought were cool, you know what I mean? And doing a lot of stupid stuff at this time. And eventually, you know, in 2017, you know, I've been drinking whiskey all day, again, no job. You know, I'm living off unemployment, which I thought was great. I didn't want to do any kind of, you know, live off anything, but I'm like, oh, great, well, it's free money for me to drink, even though I work for it, you know, cool. And so, you know, Joaquin had one liquor store. That's all I had. It was like a liquor store and a school. So I had, you know, like a quarter mile walk. So it was kind of a little nature walk, you know, as I used to put it, you know. So I'd do that, and I'd go get my alcohol every day, you know. And then one day, my solution stopped working for me, man. You know, I was getting more and more angry. You know, get angry at myself, get angry at my situation, get angry, just, you know, people on my back. I'm just like, you know, I was really happy drunk when I started drinking, man, you know, and eventually not happy at all. I just got angrier and angrier and angrier, and the anger fueled me. And so I was drinking whiskey all day, and, you know, my neighbor who lives in a trailer on our property next to where we burn our trash and stuff is like, oh, here's a bottle of whiskey. I'm like, yes, all right, cool. And so I drink that whiskey down. I'm on a whole bunch of other things too, you know, and a fire broke out, man, you know, and, you know, I put hands on somebody that I really care about. And, well, my mom is calling the cops. Best thing she could ever done for me, you know, and I'll say that wholeheartedly. I have a lot of gratitude for calling cops to me. But I've never been in jail. They came out, you know. I went out, ran up some chick, you know, came back because I felt like, hey, someone told me I had to be home, you know. I get home, and you know, next thing I know, I'm getting drawn down by like the Tulare County Sheriff's, you know. I go to jail, you know, and that was interesting, you know. Okay, now it's taking me to jail and stuff, you know. But I go through jail, go through that, you know, and nothing changes, man. You know, I get out of jail, and guess what I do? I still keep drinking. Still keep drinking, still keep doing what I'm doing. And but I try a little harder this time. You know, I tried to get my probation told me to go talk to these people called New Heights, you know, and they referred me. I did try to do New Heights, and the outpatient couldn't do it. I have no car. I'm unemployed. I can't get anywhere. I could just sit and drink, basically. And so I remember going there, borrowing a car to go there and tell them, drunk, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, Lily, and she's like, are you drunk? And I'm like, yes. Yes, I'm drunk, you know. I can't do this. I went to go tell him I can't do it, though, so I thought really highly of myself for doing that. You know what I mean? And so, you know, she made some phone calls. I'm like, I need to be in a place, lady. I'm like, put me in a place. I gotta be in a place. So she went, and she made some phone calls. I'm like, nothing came of it. Went home, got drunk like always, you know. And then I'm on the way to the store to go get another beer, man. You know, I came a walk, dude, and I'm walking like in this little path I take, you know, and all of a sudden, I get a phone call from Pine. I love seeing the Pine guys here, man. You know, I got a phone call from Dave from Pine saying, we got a bed for you. I'm like, I turn right back around. So I knew something was different, because if I didn't go get my beer, drink it, and then go back, you know, something was different, man. I was getting there, you know. So I got into Pine, man. You know, went through the program, did good. You know, got my sponsor who's here today. I love seeing you, man. I love you. I love everything you've done for me. But that's not the thing. You know, I didn't get honest and I didn't accept, you know, myself. You know, I didn't accept that I'm an alcoholic for one, so I didn't accept everything that comes along with it. I wasn't honest to him, you know. And so what happens is, you know, I do really good, but I don't really get in the step where I get to step three, and, you know, I don't get serious into it. I don't really care about believing a power greater than myself because, you know, I know everything. I am my greatest power, you know. And what happens? I go out and I stay out for a while, you know. I come back to Visalia again, you know. Somebody drops me off, and you know, to sleep outside the, you know, I'm sleeping at the bus stop at Murray and over by Pine there, Murray and Locust. I'm sleeping at the, you know, waiting to get back into Pine, you know, and I'm so great to be in. Do a little better this time. Get a little more connected with the power greater myself. But again, you know, I'm the kind of person that, like, hey, you know, my will, I'll do stuff and God take care of these hard things, but, yeah, I'll take everything else in my will, you know? And I still was not addressing my behavior, still not accepting my behavior, still not taking responsibility for it, and will be willing to change it. And guess what? I'm with somebody, they offered me a drink, and boom, 20 seconds later, that was 4 months and 10 days right out the window, you know? So again, I go back, and I'm going right back to where I used to, but this time, I'm losing stuff, what's called faster, and I got another really good job, lost that. I lost my really awesome place to stay, and plus I took one of my best friends out with me, you know, and yeah, it sucks, you know. My sponsor kept blowing my phone up, my friends kept blowing my phone up, I ignored every one of them, because, of course, I don't want to face you guys, I'm feeling all the shame and the guilt, you know. But, you know, this time, you know, my spot, lo and behold, I finally was like, okay, well, I got nowhere to go. I don't want to get sober, but I'm going to go detox again anyways. My sponsor picked me up. I went back to Pine, detox. I remember him sitting me down, and he looks at me, and he says, like, Robert, he's like, it's not women, it's not booze. He's like, you are the problem. He's like, you're the effing problem. And I'm like, oh, I'm the problem? Now it's starting. That was the first of a few, like, dumb moments I had. I'm like, I'm the problem. What? Oh, okay, I'm the problem. And that started to get me thinking. And at this point, I had nothing left, man. You know, I burned all my bridges I had. The only bridge I didn't burn was this program, was AA, and all my friends. I'm so thankful for that. You know, but I got serious into it, man. You know, I had no choice but to lean on the power greater myself, because no one else can do this for me. My sponsor, he's a great guy. He can't keep me sober. My friends are all great. They can't keep me sober. You know, a relationship, which I kept trying to justify every time, that can't keep me sober either. I have to, what's it called, do this for myself, and I have to believe in a power greater myself in order to restore me to sanity. You know, it's the second month of the year, and, you know, step two, man, you know, super important. So, you know, I got into the steps, man. I got in that four step, and I got to realize exactly who I am as a person, man, and that was huge for me, because I want to say I was ignorant of that, but seeing what that was on paper, and then also, back to what my sponsor said, that last column of the paper, I have a hand in everything that's happened to me. What? I'm guilty? No, you know? But that was a huge eye-opener for me, and I'm like, I feel grimy after it, dude. I'm like, okay, I've done these things. I chose to accept them this time, because basically the times before, I wouldn't accept it. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, I've done some, you know, dirtbag stuff. I don't want to accept it. No, not at all. This time I chose to accept it. I had nothing else left, man, because I had nowhere else to do. So I ran to the program, and I ran this power that was, you know, I started being totally honest with my sponsor for once. Yeah, even he was surprised. I was like, being totally honest with him, he's like, I should probably let you go. And I'm like, yeah, probably. But he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I appreciate that, man. I really do. And so that's what I did, man. I got really into it, you know, started getting service, you know, and I started to see things happening, man, you know. I started to feel better, you know, once I accepted, you know, that I'm bodily and mentally different than my fellows, man. That was great, you know, and the power greater myself, you know, that is restoring me to sanity. That feels great. I'm, you know, I had nothing left, and then, you know, and it's been great. It's been uncomfortable, and that's the thing. I'm so grateful for the uncomfortability, because I didn't even want to get sober this time. I was like, I don't want no part of it, okay? You know, it's uncomfortable learning about myself as a person, uncomfortable doing that. It wasn't hard, uncomfortable, you know, and also the wreckage of my past, man, you know, super uncomfortable, you know, legal wreckage, you know, relation from the, you know, stuff from the past, financial wreckage, but because of this power grew myself, because, you know, and that gets to desperation, man. I'm so desperate not to have to rebuild my life again like I've been doing. You know, I'm 32 years old, man. I've had to rebuild my life more than once. I mean, probably like half a dozen or a dozen times, man. I got tired of that. I finally got tired, you know. I think I've been... Okay, and then, you know, I felt I got tired. And so, again, accepting, man. And I'm going to read something out of the Big Book, guys, if that's cool. This is 417. I used to go to my sponsor all the time, and I'd be like, Louie, this is my problems. This is what's going on. He's like, just read 4:17. I'm like, but I want to be my therapist and tell me what to do about my problems. He didn't do that, but what he did this for me. And this is 4:17. It's about acceptance. And it says the second paragraph, and it says, "And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in my life unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I cannot stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes." Absolutely, man. You know, and what, you know, what it's like now, you know. But I get into that part, you know. Sorry, I'm kind of rambling, guys. But get into that part. Man, I'm in awe today. Like, really, I'm in complete, just in utter awe. Like, I keep finding myself just like, wow, if I need any proof this program works, man, there's a higher power, the power greater than myself out, you know, in my working wonders in my life and you know, working to replace my will, you know, and control my life. Dude, I see that all the time. I see that in you guys. When you guys go through some stuff, man, that's hard, and you guys are, you know, fighting your kids back, or you guys just going through, you know, wreckage your past, or, you know, legal stuff or whatever, when you guys overcome that stuff, I like, that's awesome. That's what I'm all about now. You know, I'm changing, a complete psychic change going on, you know. It's something I have to do every time. You know, I have to, 10, 11, and 12, the maintenance steps, man, I have to do that constantly. I have to do set 10 every day, every day. Usually to my significant other man and some of my friends. I mean, just can't keep it real. You know, people close to me. Like, but that's how I keep this, man. You know, this recovery sobriety, man, is contingent upon the maintenance of my serial condition. And I'm blessed to be able to do that today, man. I have to work this program. But what it's like now, dude, I mean, I'm just completely blessed and grateful. I'm grateful for all the stuff I've gone through, man. Like my sponsor tells me, he's like, you know, your past experience is your greatest asset. And at first I'd be like, I don't know, dude, you know what I mean? Like, nah, maybe not, you know, but no, it is, you know. And like, I'm in school right now, I'm a full-time student. Also, I'm a supplemental instructor for one of my classes, so I gotta go in and kind of do some teaching. And, you know, I mean, I never would have thought, man, if 32 years old, alcoholic drug addict, I'm teaching some kids about alcohol and drugs in my class, you know what I mean? Pretty cool, you know, but I get to go there and tell them my truth, man, and I got a reaction out of them, and it was cool, because I'm not ashamed of who I am today. I'm not ashamed of my past, I'm not ashamed of the things I've done, because in my step five, you know, I gave those things over to my sponsor and my higher power, man, and a weight was just lifted off my shoulders. You know, I get to use these things, you know, as a benefit today, man. And it's awesome, you know. I get to be a productive member of society today. You know, I love seeing the Pine Guys here, man, because, you know, I'm blessed to be able to be an intern there now. It's for my major, you know, and I'm a work study, so I get paid for it, man, which is crazy. I mean, like, wow, you know, that's not me, man. Like I said, I'm the kind of person, I'm comfortable in a gutter drunk somewhere. And here I am, dude. I am not becoming a... you know, I have to pray for God's, you know, for me to be a maximum benefit to God every day, you know, and it's not me, man, this is all a higher power, you know, because I settle when I'm in my will, man. I settle for, like, whatever makes me feel good, whatever is the lowest common knot, whatever, I totally settle. And today, in my life, I'm not settling today. You know, I'm reaching higher, man, and it's because there's a power greater myself that gives me the strength to do these things, because, you know, I don't like to ask questions. I don't like to make waves. I don't like to, you know, to do anything really hard to make my life better. You know, again, I go for the easy stuff, you know. I don't deal with my problems today. Not today I do. But before, I don't deal with my problems, man. I don't like feeling anything. That's why I've drank for so long. And now, as awkward and as uncomfortable as it may feel sometimes, I can deal with my problems today. I can deal with my emotions. That emotional sobriety is what I'm reaching for today. You know, and there's no power other than a higher power that can take that away from me, because I obviously can't do that for myself. So, that higher power, man, you know, so the newcomers here, get honest, man, and accept, you know what I mean? Your history is your history, man. Your past is your past, you know, accept it, you know. It was hard for me too. I'm not going to lie. It was really hard. It took me a couple times, you know, through this program, but I was never really in this program, man. You know, I would basically sit here and I would take up space. I would be here for the wrong reasons, you know, and that's not the case today, you know. I always look for the differences, not the similarities. Now I look for the similarities. That's one thing I totally have. Sometimes it's hard, man, you know, to look for some similarities, you know, but look for those similarities, man, in anything. Find how you can relate to it. And it's crazy, since I've been doing that, man, people tell my story all the time. And it's crazy, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not in the back anymore like I used to be sitting, but like, oh man, you know, get this guy off the mic and stuff, you know, he's a freaking idiot, you know. I'm like, okay, maybe I don't agree with that, or maybe, you know, but hey, I know what that feels like to do, feel like that, you know. I look for the similarities, and I had to, but I had to go through stuff like I did before in order to get to that frame of mind. Again, having nothing left, the gift of desperation, being absolutely tired, because, you know, my best thinking gets me drunk all the time, gets me in places like jail and recovery homes. They're bad, recovery homes not bad, but that's where it gets me. You know, I love them, you know, and that's, I'm really thankful for Pine Recovery, because that's not only where I got my sponsor, but that house introduced me to the rooms of AA. I sure as heck wasn't going to no AA program on my own, or AA meeting. No, I was never going to go to the Alano on my own, but it's because of Pine, you know, and a power group myself that kind of had to push, you know, put my ass in gear to get there, you know, for me to get exposed to the AA and exposed to this book. And then, you know, I could not, like it says here, you know, since I couldn't accept my alcoholism, I couldn't stay sober. I never accepted anything before. I was real good at looking, you know, good. You know, okay, well, I got a job. I'm going to do this. You know, I got my sponsor. He's right there. You know, now, if I call him or work with him, that's a different story. But I'm not going to tell you that. You know, I'm not going to tell you all the things I'm doing and not telling anybody about. You know, when I chose to accept and be honest, that's when God started working miracles in my life, man. That's when He was able to come in, you know, because there was that ego and the arrogance. You know, he had no place in there because I was, you know, it was all there. But once I, you know, in the third step prayer was, I hated my sponsor had made me memorize it. I was like, I don't want to memorize this. This is too much, you know. But I'm glad I did, man. And, you know, that third step prayer is something I have to say on a daily basis, and for God's will in my life, not mine. Because, again, full knowledge of my will, it's not a good thing. But yeah, I just want to, again, thank the Valley Group, man. Thank all you guys for being here. Welcome the newcomers, man. Just keep, I don't like keep coming back, because I kept coming back, you know what I mean? Just stay. Just stay, probably a better one, you know what I mean? Because I did keep coming back, you know. I think I'd like to think I'm staying this time, you know. I know I'm staying, you know, because the benefits just, you know, outweigh the, there's no negative side to this, man. Get to know you really are, who you really are as a person. No matter how awkward it is, there's be that wreckage of your past, man. Work through it, man. I heard my grand sponsor say at the men's dag meeting one time, he's like, the thing I could tell you guys is patience. You know, just have patience. I don't have patience, man. I'm not a patient person. AA is teaching me patience, man. AA is teaching me how to grow the hell up, and it's crazy. You know, it took me until I'm 32 years to grow up, man. But, you know, have patience, but it's because it's God's will in my life. Knowing who I am and doing my steps, me doing my four-step, man, and the good, the bad, and the ugly, I know exactly what I don't want to be anymore. I have full knowledge of that. And so, that is what God wants me to be, man. And so, that's what, you know, that's what I have to pray for on a daily basis. But, yeah, just keep, man. Get a sponsor. Work your steps, man. If you may think you like I did, I didn't think I'd meet my sponsor anything in common. I was like, how am I going to work with this dude? You know what I mean? But now it's developing a friendship. I love the guy, man. Not just because of what he's done for me, but what he's shown me. You know, he's guided me. He's been patient with me. I know I test that patience probably more than once, you know. But I appreciate you, man. You know, and, you know, I used to put a price on things. People, especially, people had a price, man. What could you do for me? You know, what you gonna get for me? You know, what do you mean to me? You had a price. I had a price too. Because if you had something I want, shit, you had me. You know, for some little time. You know what I mean? Until I got bored or whatever. You know, but people don't have a price to me today. This is priceless right here. Your guys, your stories, what you guys go through. You guys like Natasha going to the program. That's awesome, man. You know, I'm super proud of you. I'm super proud of a lot of people. And people that could love you too, that before you could love yourself, that was one of the things, because I couldn't love myself when I first got here. It was people like my sponsor, my friends in here, even when I kept messing up, you know, they loved me to love myself. So there will be people like that for you. Just keep sticking it out, man. And if you don't believe in the higher power thing, hey, welcome to join the club, dude. Join the club, you know. At first, same here, you know. But just be willing to be willing. That's all, like, you know, the spiritual principles, man, you know, belief, just willing to believe, you know, in a power, the greater yourself, you know, honesty, humility, and willingness, man. That's all you need. Just be willing to be willing. I mean, we all, you know, that's what I recommend. Anyways, I'm Robert, grateful alcoholic. Thank you, guys.